Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong, profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and every week I get to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs, business people, authors, speakers, thought leaders. I don't know if that's even a good term anymore, but I kind of like it. And these are people that I can find who are freely sharing their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice with us each week. And they have great stories. I like to find out where they came from, how they got where they are right now, and some of the, you know, the little hooks and turns on their path that makes for great, great stories. So today I have as a guest Lee Karaher, and she is the CEO and acclaimed communication strategist, and she's known for her practical solutions to big problems. She started Double Forte, and I think that's how we pronounce it down here in the South, Forte, as a new kind of communications firm, good, designed to work with good people doing good work for good companies by providing the best results and service in the business. So far, so good. And this is not her first rodeo, by the way, and she's learned a lot along the way that she shares with others in the hopes that everyone can reduce trauma and conflict in the workplace. I'm laughing because, oh my gosh, and create careers that matter. Lee is also an author, a speaker, a trainer, and a doer, and she's here to share what she's learned the hard way to help reduce that aforementioned drama in the workplace. Her first book, Millennials in Management, The Essential Guide to Making It Work at Work, was published recently in October, October 2014. And the book is based on her own work building a successful intergenerational workplace, as well as the insight from more than 250 managers, leaders, and employees of all ages in different industries across the country. For millennials, management, and senior leaders, the book is a practical and entertaining guide to breaking down the misconceptions between Gen Y, Gen X, and the baby boomer generations. You know, I'm not going to be able to talk much today, I can tell. And it details how to build a constructive, productive work environment that builds businesses, loyalty, and strategic advantage. And in this, I asked her to cover a couple of topics in here because I think they're very important for our audience. So today she's going to talk about great careers, full lives. It's a model for profitable work for the future. And the second thing I really wanted to talk to her about, and probably my most favorite topic, is modern workplace etiquette. Don't let your manners get in your way. And I'm emphasizing your and your twice. And there's a reason for that. Lee, good morning. I'm so excited to have you here. And welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio.
Thank you so much, Denise. I'm so happy to be with you.
Well, I'm fascinated by, well, you have several topics, and I had to choose one, and
right.
Then I begged for a second one. It's like, can we talk about these two? But I've had a lot of conversations recently on the radio and in social media about millennials,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, how you work with them, how you understand them. So this is a big, big topic right now, and I'm so glad to, you know, that you can speak to it. My thing with millennials is, honestly, what I perceive is just their lack of grace, dignity, and manners. So you can correct me. Go. Go ahead. I can take it. I'm a big girl.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, that is the lack of, you're from the South. I'm from San Francisco, so we don't use that word grace as much as you probably do. However, dignity and manners, that is actually the number five of the eight common, the most common myths or complaints about millennials by their older colleagues. Manners and etiquette is number five or six, and that's pervasive across the country, no matter really where you are in the country. And I just focus on the top eight in my book, and so this manners thing really comes up all the time. So it's not, you're not wrong. But I think that it's not their fault. So when we, you know, I learned manners from my mother, who learned them from her mother, and my mother sort of toned down my grandmother's, and I toned down my mother's, and by the time you dilute, you get into the office, and what is that woman wearing, or why, what? You know, you just have these incredulous conversations, because really, so much of the training that young people had as boomers and Xers, and I'm a boomer, I'm the last year of boomers, really is not available across the country anymore. So the
how do you mean?
So when I grew up, I went to cotillion, I went to dance class, I went to nurse class. I had a all the girls in my set. We went to fancy dinner planning to understand how to pass the salt and pepper and what forks to use and where do you put your napkin. And my kids are now 17 and 14, and it's not an offer. And they go to relatively exclusive schools. It's not even an offer for them. And it was part of the curriculum for me. And my mother used to talk about it. You know, she used to have white gloves on for this, right? So people are just not given these things. And everyone would benefit from reading Emily Post's etiquette book. And there's the business etiquette book.
Right.
It's wonderful. It's blue. It's $50. It's not getting into the workplace, right? Everyone in the country would benefit from this. So if you're from part of the country where this manners is how to go to a dance, how to go to dinner, all those things aren't part of your young curriculum, then you just don't have it in your conscience if your parents didn't whip it into you, you don't have it in your conscience when you get into the workplace. If you add on to this sort of our very transient workforce, so I live in San Francisco, people are here from all over the country, all over the world, and there are definitely social norms in different parts of our country, but when you come to a new city and everybody's from somewhere else, there is no norm, right? It's really up to the business. It's up to the company you're in to set the norms of manners and etiquette, because you cannot expect everyone to have the same growing up as you did, as the same experience as you did. People don't mean to be rude. Okay.
No, I get
99.99% of the people do
right.
not mean to be rude. They just don't know that they're being rude in your context.
And I think that's where, because I've had several conversations about this, and I'm slowly coming around to moving my, I'll be very frank with you, fairly negative ideas about millennials.
Mm-hmm.
To being a little bit more clear on who they are, why they're like they are, and trying to be far more understanding and not as impatient with them. Sometimes I still get impatient. Sometimes they just flat deserve it, I'll be honest with you. But
yeah.
I think my biggest question has always been and remains, where is their common sense?
Mm-hmm.
You would you would think that people would know not to be rude or dismissive or walk up to the president of the company and go, "Hey, Billy Bob, you know, I'll talk with you. Yeah, I want Joe's job, by the way."
I get emails all the time. Hey, Lee. Like, really?
Yeah. I'll be honest with you. I'm from the South. We don't roll that way. You talk about
neither do we here. You know,
here.
Most of us don't roll that
but
way.
I'm very
and
confused
I think it's
about why they can't figure it out, I think.
They can't figure it. If they don't have correct, you know, it's like me not figuring out how to dry my hair. If no one tells me how to dry my hair correctly, if my hairstylist doesn't tell me what to do, I don't do it right, which she's seen a picture of me when I was speaking, and she, like, rolled me. She called me and had me come in to her salon and say, "You don't know what you're doing." Like, I'm 50 years old, really? So, you know, if we're not told, if we're not shown what the norm is, then we have no reference point. And if we don't get corrected, then we just keep going because, you know, no input is the same as positive input. So, I know that for myself, I'm a working mom. My husband works half-time. We have two kids that are extremely busy, blah, blah, blah. And it is just easier for me to do things for my children. This is what I found myself. My older son was 13, and he's having some issues in his classroom. And I just started fixing it for him instead of making him do it himself because it was so much faster. I could get it done in half an hour. I was going to have to coach him through 12 hours of tears to get to the right answer. And when I realized I was doing things for my son instead of coaching my kid to get to the right answer or get to a satisfactory solution, I I've become that mom. I've become that parent. And I see it all over the place, right? We just, we're all very busy and we're doing things for our kids that we probably shouldn't do. And we probably should be weaning them off of, you know, everybody wins soccer a lot earlier in life and weaning them to, here's what we expect in the real world. In our house, here's what's okay. Outside of this house, that is not okay kind of things, you know.
Right.
You really have to take the bull by the horns.
Exactly. I guess here's another question for you, though. And what I'm understanding from listening to other people and actually starting to look into it, because I mean, I, as a business owner, I get approached by millennials all the time, and I can't read their resumes. They're in tech speak.
Yeah.
I don't even bother to respond. I just delete them. It's like, no, 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 and no. And I guess I'm wondering is, do their parents even know to teach them how to behave in the real world? Some of them kind of
some
act
of
like
don't.
They're raised by wolves. I mean, they don't do.
I think some of their parents would be flabbergasted and horrified, frankly. And other
really?
Parents wouldn't know. It really depends on where you're from and
yeah,
what the norm
yeah.
is where you are. So I can tell you at my company what we do now, and this is actually true not just for millennials, but because we have people from all over the world in my company, we have a small company, 40 people. We have people from Colombia, from Latin America, from Europe, from Canada, from the South, from the Northeast, from, I mean, in Midwest and, you know, Texas. It's just, it's a big melting pot of culture and norms, right? And so now what we've done, and I realized people were, their manners were getting in their way. And it's very, you know, it's very embarrassing to say to someone, you're rude. Like, I'm not rude. You know, you're attacking their own social standing, their own moral
right.
compass, you know. And it is hard to do. So, like I said, everyone would benefit from the Emily Post book because it's just, it is the standard. But it's too big and no one looks at it. So I created this stuff on, and I put it on our intranet. And I was like, there's great stuff on the intranet. No one ever goes to an intranet. I really, you know, it's an awesome idea, but I think the click-through on internets and companies is something like less than 5%. So, you know, it's there. So it just didn't sink in. And so then we just, okay, I have to get into people's hands. I have to put it on people's desks. So I ended up creating this little box of the manners that matter. And it was every little card, every card is a different manners kind of thing in different categories. And then we trained people. It's like, okay, here, when you're going to a restaurant, here are the 9 things I want you to know. There's actually 92, but just know these 9, right? And we trained them, and we did videos, funny videos, and we just showed, you know, we went to the extreme. Here's, you know, no one's like this, but everyone could see a little bit of themselves in there. You know, so like, oh, I didn't know I shouldn't. I didn't know I was, like, tapping my finger on the table and disrupting people. Oh, I didn't even know I was supposed to put my napkin in my lap. I didn't know that I wasn't allowed to, I really shouldn't put makeup on at the table. I didn't know that, I mean, just people didn't, I didn't know that I shouldn't, you know, at a business dinner, I shouldn't put my hand, my, you know, my elbow over the back of the chair. You know, things that they just didn't know. So that really opened my eyes to people don't know. And so it's really our responsibility as business owners is to set the norm. So, and so we do that now when people come in. There is a the first 30 days is mostly a lot of training, right? We do a lot of training. Here's how we do emails. Here's an appropriate beginning and end. Here's an appropriate subject line. Here's an you know, you're always 5 minutes early to conference calls. You never talk about personal travels on a business on a conference call. You never know who's there. You know, this is not the time to talk about your trip to Vegas. You know, you always address somebody with their full name first. You always stand up when you meet somebody. And a lot of women, I think, don't, it's very interesting depending on where they came from, but a lot of women just still sit down when they're meeting somebody, and that's the first thing that puts them in a subjugated role is when you're sitting instead of standing. Unless you're in charge, I still stand, right? It's a sign of respect. But a lot of women have been taught in their lives, women sit, men stand. In business, women stand too. And so you really have to teach these things. And my recommendation to everybody is just to do this early. Don't let someone be rude and not know it for a long time, because then you're just setting them up for fail.
Well, not only that, but then other people, you know, it's just common for you to emulate other people. It just happens.
Exactly.
You kind of take on their coloration.
Yeah, I mean, so true. And I think the, and you know, what you said, you get resumes all the time, and I get resumes all the time, too. And I used to just delete them. And now, if we reject somebody because they were too informal or they gave us the wrong cover note, like I this happened yesterday, I got a cover note to another person at another agency that was, you know, to me, you know, I got it in my email. And so I let the woman know. I said, you sent me the wrong letter. And she goes, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, my goodness.
And I know this, I mean, I'm connected to this person, like two steps connected. So I'm going to, you know, we're going to talk to her. But I did say to her, never let this happen again, you know, because you just don't know. So we used to just delete stuff. But it was so pervasive that I told the person in my company, I said, okay, I want you to tell people why we're not talking to them. If we're not talking to
them. Good idea.
If we're not talking to them because they were rude, if we're not talking to them because it's an inappropriate ask, you know, if it's just spam, don't bother. But, you know, people took an effort to send us an email. They looked at our website, or they didn't. You know, sometimes they get mail to Mr. Lee Caraher. I mean, it's not that hard to find me. I am really simple to find. I get pictures everywhere. It's, you know, it's not that hard to find me. So I actually now have, you know, when we get resumes and we don't choose to talk to somebody because of their resume or because of their communication with us, we actually get on the phone and talk to them and say, here's why. And we can't talk to you, but we don't want you to keep doing this. And hopefully you're helping them get their next job.
Right. Do they get defensive? Do they accept it as
constructive? I think about 80%. I mean, it's defensive. Is about maybe 10%. You know,
I'm surprised. I would think well, they may be in shock though too.
Yeah. Well, no one
doesn't know how to respond.
Right? So embarrassed, 100%. Right.
Okay.
Embarrassed is 100%. And so, you know, the person who's calling is very, you know, we have decided to tell. As an agency, have taken the stand that we want to help people get, you know, fix their mistakes that are getting in their way. So I know this is going to be embarrassing, but here's what you need to know. You sent, you know, there was typos in this, or you said you were this, but then none of the stuff matched up, or, you know, you sent us a very inappropriate photo, you know, please, no cleavage, you know, whatever, right? Or man spreading. I mean, you get a lot of the guys, you know, man spreading. So,
oh
and we just, and I know this might be embarrassing to you, but we, you know, it's from a good place and we want you to succeed and this will get in your way to the goals that you've told us about. So 100% embarrassment, 10% defensiveness, and probably 70% of people eventually email us back and say, thank you so much.
Good.
It is extra effort.
That's really, right, that's what I was trying to get at. I was wondering if once they kind of calmed down and got past the, how dare they, ooh, ow, that hurt, were they able to stand back and go, oh, okay, that makes sense, and I really appreciate the, you know, the input. So I'm glad that people are taking it. Go ahead. I'm sorry, you said what?
More than 50% call us and say thank you.
Good.
Or send us an email and say thank you. And, you know, when we, and then if we get a thank you, then we're able to say, you know what? And so we just keep pulling it through. If we get a thank you and we have a suggestion for them on where they should apply for a job, we say, we introduce them. So to somebody else
that's
if we don't.
Nice.
But I think that the, you know, the generosity, you know, I think business is built on generosity and you, in the pay it forward attitude, that is, you just don't know where those people are going to end up. And you just don't know where you might want them later in their lives, or they might become your client, or, you know, what you don't want is somebody, you know, you reject and you're rude to, and you don't need to be rude, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, a couple years later, they've figured it out, and they're in a position of authority, and they're like, you know, I'm looking for an agency. You know, those guys were nice to me. They told me something, and so this connection with people who are trying to, you know, these connection with the people who are looking for work, you know, it doesn't just end when you don't hire them, right? Because they're going to go into the world in other places.
Well, I have to tell you, you just really kind of opened my eyes to something, because for the longest kind of time when I would get resumes, I would respond to every single one. And then in the past couple of years, I think, I've been getting resumes that, I'll be quite honest with you, I can't read them.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a speed reader. I read, you know, multiple books a week, probably 4 to 6 books a week.
Wow.
At a minimum. And I look at these things and go, you have got to be kidding me. And
yeah.
I just kind of got it into my head that I can't be bothered with this.
Right.
Which you just pointed out to me is the absolute wrong position for me to take. So I'm going to take your advice, and I'm going to reach out to these people and do exactly what you do. And thank you for that, because, I mean, I was really, to be honest, it didn't feel good to just not
ever respond to them. No, it doesn't,
right?
Yeah.
It doesn't. But I was so irritated by the time I would try to pick my way through this garbage that,
right,
you know, I didn't want anything to do with them. So, and that was the absolute wrong thing for me to do. So you just opened my eyes, and thank you very much.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, one thing we did do is when a resume came to us a couple of years ago, it was just atrocious, and we called her, you know, your resume is just nowhere in shape for you to even look at. You have all these acronyms. I have no, you know, I'm in the business a long time. I have no idea what these mean. And she called back. She goes, do you have a sample of something that you would like? And I'm like, well, we do. So we send her the sample. So we just have a sample that we send if people ask for it, you know, of a good one.
Well, that's an excellent idea as well. Right.
Small, right. And it seems like these people should, you know, should be doing their homework before they do a resume. But there are a lot of people out there who do not have the resources or the wherewithal or the common sense. They've never been told what common sense is on this. Particularly, there are more millennials with bachelor's degrees by capita and by percentage than there are, you know, the millennials are the most educated generation. By percentage and by sheer number, there are more with Bachelor of Arts degrees, which in this country means that there are more people who are graduating from college, they are the first person in their family to graduate from college and go maybe go into a white-collar business, right? So they don't have they didn't grow up in with those expectations, right? Their families worked really, really hard. We see it all the time. Families worked so hard. Moms and dads working two jobs so their kid can go to college, so they can have a better life than they did, a better opportunity, a better career than they did. But they just don't have. They're just not born, and they're not born into a community of professional expectation and what goes along with that, right? So,
yeah, and that makes sense.
So I'm not sure it's all their fault. And that's really,
no.
You know, because I was so negative, like you just said. Oh my gosh, I was so negative. And I didn't hire. My business was started in 2002, right after, you know, down out here, the big crash out here, and then 9/11, of course, and then it's just really stalled economy. And I just hired people with 10 years of experience because I could. And then in 2009, I changed my business model to be able to hire junior people again, which is a long story. And I hired a couple. They were awesome. And then the first one I hired brought a dog to work the first day of work, did not ask. I walked in later that day. I had a meeting, and I walk in, and I'm like, there's a dog here. And I was like, now, it wasn't just a dog. There was a dog bed. There was a kibble dispenser. There was a special water thing for the dog. And I was like, well, the dog's here. You can't get really, I'm not going to
see, that's where
that
the whole
person.
Common sense complaint with me
well,
comes in. It's like, what
dog
the heck were you
dog.
Thinking?
I said, did anybody know the dog was coming? No. Did she ask if she could bring her dog? And my next reaction was, is anybody allergic to dogs here? Because I didn't know. And this dog, the dog is a service dog, and it has a little red vest. And I'm like, that dog is a chihuahua. That dog is not a service dog. But it was technically, legally a service dog. And
really?
I assume it's like that way here. But in California, you can't ask a service dog to leave. Well, you know, it didn't even occur to her to ask because it's a service dog. And, of course, the law says she can bring the dog where she wants. But, you know, I explained it to her later. You know, next time you should ask, you know. And now we need a policy. Who knew? We need a policy on dogs. The other thing, what happened, so then she had this whole, you know, by the end of the first, her first month, and please understand, this woman is fantastic. She's a rock star. I had 6 service dogs in my office, right? She ran this little side business to get your dogs, you know, with the jackets. And I'm like, oh, my God, you guys. But, you know, it just didn't occur to her because it's a legal thing. She got her dog,
right,
you know, with a jacket, and there was nothing really could do about it. But I, you know, now she laughs about it, right? Now she totally laughs about it. But she's a rock star. She does wonderful, wonderful work and all this kind of stuff. And then I hired 6 more millennials later, like 2000, you know, it took us a while to come out of 2008 decline. I think 2010, I hired 6 millennials within about a 2-month period of each other, and they all failed, 100% failure. And I've never had 100% failure in recruiting in my life. And before this, I was at a very large company with lots and lots of people. And before that, I was in another large company with lots and lots of people under me, and I was known for being a great recruiter and retainer of people. And here, 6, 100% failure. And one person could have been their fault, but 6 people, there's no way. That had to be us, right? And so I started looking at it, and I realized, number one, I was just bitter. I was like, oh, my God, right? I was just bitter. And then I started reading about it. I didn't even know that there was this thing called a millennial at that time. And it was just, everything was so negative, just so negative. And I was sort of had this epiphany. It was like, I got at least 10 more years in my career to go. I cannot be negative about the people who are going to take this company over from me. I have to have a positive outlook who I'm walking into work every day, or I'm going to be sitting in the corner in a fetal position, of course, right? So, and I just started looking at my own, like, where, you know, what were my myths? What were my, you know, held beliefs? And what I was saying a lot to myself is, that person should know. Why doesn't they know that? She should, or he should. And I realized I was putting all the should on it.
Right, and we all have. We're looking at these, I call them kids, and you're thinking, what in the world is going on between those ears? Anything?
Right.
Hello? And it's the wrong attitude to have, and
it's the wrong attitude. I totally had the wrong attitude.
Yeah.
So I realized I was saying should, and that's just the first kiss of death for any leader, because you haven't told them. So then I set out to, like, remove the shoulds and just ram all the expectations into the first 30, 60, 90 days of anyone's employment so that there was no way they could be wrong. There was no way they could be wrong without the information unless they wanted to be.
Gotcha. I want to go back to something you said earlier when you were talking about where you had to create this box and say, here's your 9 points at the restaurant. And I guess I was thinking, I wonder if any of these people, these millennials, come back and go, you know, I didn't know these things, but now I want to explore more. Where can I find
they
more?
Do.
What else is there for me to learn?
Well, so we started with, I think we just started with 36 cards, and now the box has, I'm looking at it right now, has more than 150 cards in it. And I have another, it was originally created for my company, and now people could get it if they want it.
Can people buy that?
Yeah,
is
people
it available?
Buy it.
Oh, cool.
I'll
okay, well,
that,
we'll talk about
are,
that at the end.
Sure. But now I have another 40 cards ready to go in as expansion packs because it's just, well, I was at a dinner, you know, this one guy who works for me, he was the first person who graduated from his college from his family. He had never been to a white table restaurant until he was maybe 27. And we have to eat a lot out, right? And that's what we do, you know, with clients, with partners, whatever. And, you know, he is very inquisitive, and he went and looked himself. But when we were creating this box, like he He had been at a very fine restaurant, and his plate just stood there on the table. He finished his meal, and the guy wouldn't take the plate away. And he was at a snooty restaurant, right? So the waiter didn't take the plate away because his fork and knife were not together on the plate. He was a really snooty waiter, and he was making a point, right?
All
right. So he had no idea, right? He just had no idea. So that's where we've sort of, as people have come, you know, as we've explained things to new people, they're like, well, what about this? What about that? And people are just automatically more aware, and they go out to restaurants, and they're like, oh, my gosh, that guy still has his ball cap on. Take the ball cap off, you know. Or
exactly.
The person
we don't,
there at the restaurant,
here,
you know, with a Bluetooth thing in their ear. Take the Bluetooth out of your ear, you know. But if you don't know, you don't know.
Right. Well, that really heartens me that they're going, oh, well, I didn't know this, but, you know, show me more. So definitely at the end of the show, I want you to tell people where they can find
sure.
these things. One of the questions I have, too, and we're going to run out of time, I'm afraid, so I'm kind of picking through. I mean, you sent me this great list of things that we could talk about, and I'm like, oh, we're not going to have time. I want to go into kind of the more virtual world of
sure.
the millennial heart and soul and mind. Good social media texting etiquette today. Some of that stuff just makes, but I'm never going to need a facelift. My eyebrows are constantly in my hairline. I'm like, what? What the heck? What was that?
That's awesome.
But talk about that, because I think that we're seeing some very sloppy, ill-mannered communication, and it's anymore, I'll be honest with you, and what I said about people taking on other people's coloration, it's not just millennials now, and that bugs me.
Yeah.
Older people who should know better are taking on these habits, and I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, that just makes my teeth clench.
Right. Well, I think there's a couple of things. One is, we have all these different modes of communication today that we did not have when I was starting my career, right? So 30 years ago, I guess, oh my gosh, I'm that old. Anyway, 30 years ago, you know, there was no texting. I had to, you know, there really wasn't a cell phone. People didn't,
no,
it wasn't pervasive.
No, we had to get up from the couch to go turn the TV.
Exactly, right?
Yep.
And now, in the first thing, there was all these things that we didn't actually have email. There was no social media. There was, you know, no Snapchat, no nothing, right? So, when I started my career, we used to fax things, and if we had to do it at a certain time, we were all on different levels of the building, you know, over intercom saying, okay, start faxing now. And, you know, I say these stories, and people are like, look at me like I'm crazy. But the first piece of that is, you know, every medium has manners. But we don't necessarily, we haven't, as a culture, we haven't said, okay, what are the right manners for texting? What is the right manners for social media? What are the right manners for LinkedIn or for cell phone use or for, you know, all these things, right? We got the availability to have cell phones, and all of a sudden people are having terribly confidential conversations in the middle of airplanes and, you know, in restaurants where, you know, I've been in restaurants where I'm like, you shouldn't sell that stock because, you know, or, you know, your wife, she knows what's going on, right? You know that? You know, I mean, because you just can't believe that people are actually having these conversations because people, you know, it's not, I don't know, they think, oh, I'll just keep going into the world with, you know, my phone and no one's listening. Well, we're all listening because we can't not. It's just so loud.
Right.
So, and the first thing where you really see this, so if you think about every medium has its own set of protocols, is television, right? So television, like you said, you used to get up and go across the table, across the living room and change the channel, move the rabbit ears around. And now, you know, and as soon as the TiVo came to the DVR, right, came into our lives, it's a wonderful thing. Oh, my gosh, I love the TiVo and the guys who co-founded the company are friends of mine, and I always laugh because I always said, I use you all the time. But, you know, time-shifting television was understood by adults. I'm going to time-shift television. I can watch my television whenever I want to, and now we can watch it wherever we want to, and we can watch whatever we want,
right,
wherever we want to, on whatever we want, right?
Exactly.
But young people growing up with TiVo as opposed to getting it as an adult, you know, they want to time shift everything. So, you know, can you pause that radio show? Mom, you know, I have my kids look at me and they press a button like they're talking to me, right? Like,
the radio
I'm not
show
pausing
thing,
that.
I catch myself going, right? Oh, wait, go back. I'll be in the car and go, oh, hang on a sec. And
oh, I didn't
I
get that.
Out.
I need to go back. So
yeah,
podcasting is wonderful that you can
really?
Get that right and go back.
Exactly.
But there is no sort of but young people think they can move all medium, right? Move all medium, and it's very challenging. I'm like, why can't I go backward on that? Why do I? Oh, I'll just do that later. I'm like, no, there is no later. It's now, today, right the second. And that so sort of same sort of phenomena is true around communication devices, right? We didn't on texting, right? I never thought I would be getting. I accept the job by text. I mean, seriously? No. You pick up the phone, you call me. But because there are no norms on that, right? So for texting specifically, you know, I have my staff turn off autocorrect because you can just your client might be texting with you, but if you use autocorrect and, you know, you're too fast, all of a sudden, you know, the name Loretta turns into Beretta, and then the person thinks you're, you know, angry at them. Or it could be really foul. You know, it's funny to look at those things when it's not you in an important conversation, you know, online when they say the worst autocorrect. But it can cause a lot of problems. So, one, we have rules around, you know, who gets to text, what clients do we text with, and, you know, it's about the person we're communicating with. What is their primary communication vehicle? And then, you know, here are the acronyms you can use. You know, only you can use OMG, IMHO, or LOL. But all the other terrible ones, don't use anything else, because everyone knows those three, but the other ones could mean anything to people. Take off the autocorrect, right? And, you know, texting is for informal or emergencies, right? Emergency, call me now, or informal, how are you doing? It's not for, you know, I'd love to accept that offer, right? And the other thing about texting, too, particularly in a professional environment, is you always need a hello and goodbye. Hi, Jane. You know, text. Okay, and then back and forth, and go, okay, bye, see you later. Just so you know it's done. Otherwise, you might be sitting there waiting for a text to come back to you. You don't know that you're finished mm-hmm. or not in a professional environment.
Exactly.
And, you know, going back and forth, stop it and pick up the phone. You know, just dial. You can just push your number, push, dial, and call, right?
I think
that just having those things, you know.
Right.
Putting rules around, and it sounds so terrible to say rules, but putting protocols, putting what's the norm, what is rude, what isn't rude, what makes you feel good, like how do you know you're done? I think the point of communication is to finish it, not to keep it going. So how do you know you're done in social media, in text, in phone calls, in Snapchat, whatever you're in?
Emails.
Right. I think I have the set of cards for email, I think is about, it's pretty thick. It's probably 15 cards on emails because, you know, people send emails without any subject line. Well, I'm never mm-hmm. opening those emails. Or they put in the subject line, survey or status report or things that don't help me. You know, use your subject line to give people an indication of what's in there and do they need to do anything. So, you know, status, you know, follow-up from call today, action needed for Lee or something like that in your subject line so people even know to open it. And then every email needs to have a hello all and a goodbye.
Exactly.
And a name.
And you never started out with,
right?
Hey, by the way, you just don't.
Right. And the other, you know, the worst thing we can do is reply all. I mean, oh, my goodness, right? If your name is not in the to line, you do not have to reply. Just, but, you know, I get emails all the time, you know, from the person way at the end of the CC line. You know, I'm like, you don't need to tell us. It's all good. Because we're just exponentializing our email by replying all when we don't have to.
No kidding. And, you know, these are things that, because I know them, I just inherently know them. I'm a reader. I study. You know,
right.
I'm constantly refreshing what's going on in my brain. so I know these things, and I'm always puzzled why other people don't know them. And that just speaks to my own arrogance, and I get that.
Well, I don't know if it's arrogance, frankly. I think a lot of us are that way. I took letter writing. We had to learn how to write a letter of complaint, a letter, all these things, right? And I have a degree. I have a bachelor's of arts degree from a very liberal arts college in medieval history. I mean, really, I got no schooling on business at all. I learned it all on the job. But there are standards of communication that were taught, right? And that has been lost. It's not taught even in business degrees. It's not taught. Other things are taught now.
I think
very
that's
disconcerting.
A crying shame.
I was actually I'm sorry to interrupt. So I was saying earlier that we have training the first 30, 60, 90 days, and we've now actually included a lot more, not just the manners and, you know, here's how we do a conference call and here's how you do, you know, here's how you go to a client meeting and here's how you do a phone, you know, a meeting, all that kind of stuff. We also now do writing modules. So we've created basically a 45-day or 60-day, I guess, set of writing practice so that we can evaluate and correct writing at the beginning of someone's tenure with us, because we don't know where they came from. You know, we can see it on their resume, where they were. We can see that they have a degree in something, but we actually don't know what their skill level is. And I was describing this to another woman who runs a firm in the city, who I know very well, and we just had to create this writing modules, and everybody has to do them, and it's, you know, how to write a letter, do this, all this kind of stuff, and we give a lot of feedback on grammar and word choice and all those kind of things. And she looked at me like, oh my gosh, Lee, how can you, mean, we need to be hiring people who already know this. And I said, well, I'm going to stop beating my head against the wall and start getting, you know, and work on getting great people, and then I can train to do anything if I have great people. But if I just hire for writing skill, then we're never hiring a junior person ever again in our career, because they just don't have those chops that we would have had as 22-year-olds.
Are they taking to it, Lee? I mean, you know, when they're going through this program, can you see the little light bulbs going off
of their pointy little
heads? Are they like, ooh, you know, this is good stuff?
Yeah, I think that, I mean, we describe it as everybody does it. It's not, you know, we're not, you know, making fun of you. This is for everybody. So we can all, you know, everyone can have the same standard. And we gave a set, everybody, the whole company took a set last week. And there's a evaluation at the end. Did you feel confident about this or not? And people didn't feel confident. The whole company didn't feel confident about this one set of grammar rules. So we were able to put another module in. Everyone will do it again in about 2 weeks. And there's never it's when you get to the end and go, I didn't know that. Who knew? Where people are like, give me more so I don't make that mistake again. Give me more so I don't waste any time not knowing these things. Give me more so that I can be better next time. And I think that in general, no one wants to do poorly. No one wants to need help, you know. So, but the more you can point things out and give them the tools, the better it is.
So they just don't know what they don't know.
They don't know what they don't know.
Good.
And we, and a big mistake we made was assuming that everyone had the same standard of, you know, everyone could write, you know, five paragraphs together with, you know, in this style that we needed. And they can't. So it's not that they can't, they just don't know what it is. So we just have to, repetition is your friend on this kind of stuff, you know. So we just give them opportunity where it's not going to impact their work, right? We give them opportunity where they can then practice, where it's not going to impact anybody's, you know, view of or performance, right? And because people like to practice where it's not going to negatively impact their performance or their opportunity to grow in advance. And so this is sort of a benign way to make sure that people are learning things and that we can see if they're tracking or not. So if you've taken the same sort of module three times and you're still not, you know, putting the apostrophe where it belongs, well, if you're not going to pay attention, then there's really no room for you.
There you go. Does that happen often? I mean, wouldn't think that it would if they want to stay.
No. It doesn't happen often at all.
Okay, good. I wanted to go back a bit and because we're talking about etiquette, and really the title of the show is Don't Let Your Manners Get in Your Way. Mm-hmm. What are some of the biggest problems that you see in the office and maybe even online? You know, what gets in people's ways from a manners point of view? What puts them in a position where people just go, I don't like you, I don't understand you, and I don't want to work with you?
Yeah. So I think there's just sort of general, you know, in the office manners that that create an impression, right? So people who don't take their dishes back to the kitchen and just sort of sitting around in, you know, dirty dishes all over the place, who don't throw away their coffee cups, it's just, you know, have mold in the bottom. I mean, I go to a lot of companies because we work with all different kinds of companies. You know, they're just creating an impression that they don't care what other, you know, they don't care about the smell, they don't care that it's dirty, they don't care about their environment, and it's not theirs, it's ours, right? I think that's one thing. Another thing about manners that gets in people's way is learning how to interrupt someone well, right? Not just saying, I need you now, you know, when someone's talking to somebody else, but I'm sorry to interrupt. I have an urgent need that I need your attention, you know. So learning how to interrupt well as opposed to just being the bull in the china shop and is really important because that definitely gets in people's way. We're in such open spaces now with cubes that have no, you know, the walls don't go to the ceiling or no walls at all, just big open seating plans. People can't, it's really close quarters in so many businesses, right? And just being nice to the person next to you, right? Can I borrow your stapler? Oh, do you want a mint? Oh, you know, that kind of stuff. Just being nice to that person and taking time to say hello, because a lot of the times people are coming in, putting their earbuds in, and just, you know, getting to work. So, you know, just being aware of who's around you can make a big difference, because everyone's going, you know, everyone's doing work, and you can see if somebody's having a distress, or you can see if someone is, you know, tired. Can I help you? You know, that kind of thing really goes a long way. I think the most egregious thing is when people just don't listen to each other, right? You have to listen first and then talk. Don't just talk. I think particularly with social media, there's just you learn how to just pile on. Well, that's not appropriate when you're talking to people, you know.
It's really not appropriate in social media either.
Yeah, but it's true too.
It does happen.
But it's also in social media, you may not be able to see the timestamp, so you might have 10 people at the same time responding, not knowing the other 9 are responding. But if you're in a conversation, you can see who's talking, right?
Gotcha.
I'll tell you one thing that I've seen has hurt people actually get jobs is, you know, if you have mints and you're taking one out, offer one to the group that you're with. I was with a client. We were recruiting for the client, and this person had gone all the way up the chain, was going to get the job. We were at a conference. The contract was in my client's handbag. And this candidate took out her box of mints, and she was with 5 of us, I guess, and she just took one out, put it in her mouth, she put her box back, and her box was full. And that's the moment she lost the job. My client was like, if she can't offer mints to the people who are standing with her, who she's going to work with, I don't even want her to be in the office. You know, so you don't even know it's getting in your way, right? You have no idea. She's that woman,
right?
I'm sure, does not know she lost that job because she didn't share the mints. I did not feel I could tell her that.
That would have been perceived as a character issue.
Exactly.
Think.
Total character issue. Absolutely
right.
A character issue. Also, I think we can get into really fast shorthand in offices, right? And we can forget to say please and thank you. And do we have to say please and thank you? No, we do not. It's an office. But please and thank you go so far in creating a community and creating respect among people that that's the other first thing I say to people. We say please and thank you all the time. Now, I grew up with my father was a cardiac surgeon. He used to say all the time, Lee, please and thank you are implied. there's no time for please and thank you in the operating room. And I used to say, well, we're not in the operating room. Here we are in the living room, you know. but that was his standard. Please and thank you are implied. Well, that's why how I grew up. So when I was looking at this issue, right, this millennial thing, I was like, okay, I got to say please and thank you. I got to say please and thank you. Well, I felt like it was so stilted. I was like, I was forcing myself to say please and thank you. And it felt very disingenuous. Nobody noticed, right? Nobody noticed. Within a month, everyone's saying please and thank you, please and thank you. And morale is like, you know, huge, through the roof. And really the only change we did was, you know, put the please and thank you into our communication. And now when people come into our office, they say, you guys are really nice to each other. Well, yeah, right? And I had to, that was one of the hardest things for me to learn because I did not
really
grow up that way. Yeah.
And that leads me to a comment in the chat room, and I'm going to read it to you because it's talking about what you are. And he says, many of the millennials I come in touch with are in desperate need of affection, love,
mm-hmm.
acceptance, and recognition.
Absolutely.
So many of them want to know that someone really cares about them and recognizes them.
Absolutely true.
Yeah.
Feedback is the gift that keeps on giving for millennials. And, you know, a lot of it is, I talk a lot about this in my book, but there's a few things. One is nobody loses soccer is wonderful for kindergartners, is terrible for a 22-year-old. Two
mm-hmm.
is in the last 15 years, as the millennials actually have come into college and moving out of college now, and millennials this year are 15 to 35, the average grade point average in this country in colleges has risen almost a full point. So you can get a 4.5 on a 4.0 average. And the most common grade, for instance, the most common grade given at Harvard University is an A-. This is crazy talk, right? There's no possible way that there's no curve if everyone's getting an A-. At Berkeley, UC Berkeley, a great institution, they have started publishing the curves of each class on the transcript because they tap out at 4.0. And they are finding that their graduates were at a disadvantage because they have a strict 4.0 rule, and other colleges, other very well-respected schools, did not. So, they were having a harder time, like understanding that a 3.8 is stellar, whereas in another institution, a 3.8 would be below average. So Berkeley started publishing the curve. So this grade inflation thing where you've been able to get better grades than you actually deserve has a lot to do with negotiation, has a lot to do with parents expecting they have really these, you know, college is expensive, and I better get something out of it. But, you know, statistically proven that the average grade is almost a full point higher today than it was 15 years ago as these millennials have gone into college and come out. So if you're allowed to negotiate for a better grade than you actually deserve, if you get a star every time you participate and you've participated, which is wonderful, but you haven't achieved, you know, 1, 2, or 3, then when you get into the workplace, you expect the same things. And we're not set up that way, right, in general. I always like to say showing up is not a skill. You know, we don't ring the bell when you come into the office. But that's what the norm has been for really the last 15 years across the country. It really doesn't mean where you live. It means these are phenomenal across the country. And the negative, they've gotten so much feedback. And, you know, in class, in schools today, you can go online and look at your kids' grades all the time. Like, that wasn't the truth for us. We just never knew, right? I mean, my parents never knew what I did until I brought my grades home. And today we can be looking over our kids' shoulder all the time and see how they're doing and what is their grade, what is the comment. And it starts in kindergarten in some places, right? And is that really that healthy? My belief is that it's not, and that we're not teaching these kids independence. And we're putting so much effort, so much emphasis on the grade that there's so much pressure on the grade that then when you get into the workplace and your work really isn't good enough, and we have to say, you're not done yet. Yes, I am. I gave it to you. You're actually not done. It's not good enough. It is good enough. I'm like, no, it's not. But that
they argue with you?
They don't, it's not argument. Actually, we don't see it in my company. I see it in some of my client companies.
Okay.
You know, it's good enough. It's really not, I can't, we can't, you know, but they've been able to negotiate for 8 years. So we
gotcha.
have to train them out of that. And the desire for input in this 24/7 world where there is so much input is really, really high. I think the other piece of that, and I know we're going to run out of time, is, you know, when 20 years ago, marketers would use the number 12 to 1, or depending on where, you know, 12, let's say 12 to 1. A person had to see a message 12 times to get it, to know what you were talking about, to internalize that message if you were the right audience. Now we use the number 35 to 1, right? So 35 times someone needs to see something to get it. And if that is what media is using, right, as a multiplier to, you know, convey a message, well, I'm not suggesting that that is what we need to use in the workplace, but there is a norm there. There is a norm in the world. And so to expect that a one-to-one relationship between the number one, I told you something, and I got something, is probably an unrealistic expectation.
No kidding. I didn't realize it was that big of a span. I really didn't.
Well,
online,
what you see, you know, click, 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 you could see the same ad 9 times or the same message. I mean, think about
right.
Geico. Geico is, you know, excellent at this, right? Geico insurance with all their different ads, you know, start with a gecko, now they get the hump day, you know, all this kind of stuff. So, you know, it's pervasive.
I don't watch TV, so I don't know.
Good for you. I mean,
I'll take
you. Well, if you're online, they do the same thing.
I am
right?
online.
If you're online.
Right.
Video,
right.
A click through, it's in a, you know, it's on the banner, it's all that kind of stuff.
Exactly. I have to ask you, because I'm listening to you talk about how you've worked with millennials and you're going into other companies, and I'm not trying to put ideas in anybody's head, but how many people try to poach your staff? I mean, I would imagine,
you know,
that's a real problem now.
So here's my – I'm just going to tell you what my philosophy is. My philosophy is if I have a company where people don't want the people who work for me, I don't have a very relevant company. So I expect that everyone's being courted because if I don't, then I don't have really good people. And if I have that expectation, then my job is to make it as good as possible for people not to want to leave. So that's my philosophy. The numbers in San Francisco are, if you're under 27, you're staying in a job somewhere between 12 and 18 months, and then you're moving on. And so if that's the norm, I sort of use the 18 month rule. If I can keep someone double 36 months, then I win. I win big, right? I've saved myself a lot of time and a lot of money, and the person has stayed with us for a long, much longer time than they anticipated. So that's my goal. And my other goal is, I really have another opinion that, you know, it used to be we thought about employee loyalty as loyal to the company while you were there. And my point of view on loyalty is I want the person to be loyal to my firm for their entire career, regardless if they're in the company or out of the company. So how can I help that person achieve what they want to achieve? It may not be in my company, but it may be, you know, what can they take from their experience at Double Forte into their world, and so that they are feel, you know, when they look at their resume, they can point to their time with us, and hopefully it's double the time that they expected to be there, and say, that was worth 3 years of my life. I learned so much there, and I'm so grateful for that time that I'm going to send them people they should hire. I'm going to recommend them when someone asks, I need a firm for such and such. I'm going to use the people there as mentors in my own life. And I think that if I have that attitude, then I focus on the right thing. As soon as you focus on, you know, not wanting people to leave you, then you focus on the wrong thing, and you start making compromises, and that's just a slippery slope.
I think that's my favorite part of the whole interview.
Oh,
just so you know, I mean, I've learned
well,
a lot, but that just made so much sense. And you're right. I mean, if people can go for it, it's like you brought them up, you nurtured them, they're going to be loyal to you and refer you and use you as kind of their high watermark. I think that is an excellent attitude.
Because no one's, you know, I can't, I have a company that does a certain thing. I may not, you know, people may come in and they, that's not what they ultimately want to do. They want to get some skills and they want to start their own company or they want to move back to Portland or whatever they want to do. Yeah. So
excellent.
That's my ultimate goal is that people are really proud of their time at Double Forte.
Well, and, the, you know, we can talk about this another time. I'm definitely going to have to get you to come back because we didn't get
you
half of what I wanted. But just so people who are listening know, and they probably already know this, that millennials have a – they're not looking for the get a job out of school, stay there
no.
for 25 years, get the gold watch. That's over. That's done.
That's over. And they've seen their parents. Oh, my gosh. Well, they've seen their parents lose that, right? They've watched their parents
right.
be loyal to companies and they have a rug – be pulled underneath from their families and lose, you know, pensions and 401ks and, you know, their expectations were not met. And so they know, their parents have told them, do not count on this. So there is no expectation that a company will take care of me. There is an expectation that I, you know, I deserve to be treated right. but there is definitely an expectation that I will, you know, my life is an open book and I'm going to follow my passion. And my passion needs to intersect with some money coming back to me, but money is not the only currency for millennials. Absolutely not. And if you're just focusing on money, well, I probably shouldn't say that. There is a small group. There's a small, you know, some, you know, finance where you can make just a ton of money. You work 80 hours a week at minimum, and that kind of stuff, right? The payoff is huge. But most people, most millennials, are more about the entire life experience than they are just about the career piece. And they, you know, the currency they want is they definitely want income, but they also want to be able to, you know, pursue their other passions outside of their career. And they look at it as a total. You know, we used to look at it as here's my work, here's my life. Millennials are much smarter about this than we were. They look at it as a total where, you know, life and work are sliding in and out of each other all day long. They imagine a different kind of arc for their lives than we did.
They do, and I can honestly see where they're going. To be honest with you, I've done the same thing they have. It just never occurred to me, and I did it without knowing why. I just knew that working in someone else's office was never good. I can do it for about a year, but I run with scissors, and frankly, I don't play well with others. So it's just not a good place for me. And I
run with scissors.
I do. And I
have
never...
scissors, everybody. Run for the hills.
In stilettos, I mean, it's crazy to picture that. But I'm an introvert. I'm a high-functioning introvert, and I do not like being around other people, and I've always known that. So
right.
I've deliberately crafted a life that allows me to work from home, allows me to do what I want to do. And, I mean, it was deliberate. It was a deliberate, you know, as you say, arc for me, but I'm not alone. I mean, a lot of us have operated like that. Yeah. I mean, Lee, this has been an absolutely fascinating conversation, and I really do want you to come back if you don't mind.
I'd be happy to come back.
Okay, good. Well, listen, where can people find you on the web? And more importantly, where can they find those boxes?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm thinking for my audience who's listening, because I know a lot of virtual assistants, a lot of small business owners listen to this program, start thinking Christmas gifts. Start thinking client appreciation gifts. So tell people where they can find those things.
Sure. So you can find me at my website, www.leecarher.com, CARAHER.com. And you can find the boxes. It's called Everything Speaks. And it's www.everything-speaks.com.
Excellent. I'm going to order one because, listen, I train and mentor a lot of people in the virtual assistants industry, and you would think that they would know a lot of what you and I have been talking about. They don't.
They don't.
They simply do not.
They don't.
And I
it's
mean,
not their fault.
I'm constantly saying, don't do that. Try it this way. How about if we approach differently? So I'm going to get one of the boxes so I can use it to start training my people. I'm buying myself an early Christmas gift.
Well, thank you. There you go.
There, I know.
Oh,
well, listen, well, thank you so much for being with me here today, and it's really been wonderful. I've taken away a couple of very important things, and I really appreciate it. So listen, everybody, the show will be available for download in about an hour, and you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Lee Carhart, and I will see you next week. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you so much, Denise.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.